We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 305. Scott, you're back from the other side of the moon, also known as Taiwan. My lip is all healed. I got the stitches out, so I feel like we're back and ready to go. It's the calm before the storm.
Calm before the storm, back at 100%, back in the country. Didn't eat anything really terrible this time, so I didn't
have
anything good to tweet
about. I was looking
at
your Twitter feed. I didn't see anything moving, crawling across your plate. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah. I know. I was, when I saw what was coming out to me, I was like, oh, that's way too normal. That's way too normal. That's just like a weird looking fish that doesn't even look that bad. So, I mean, like the worst thing that I ate doesn't look good on camera, that it doesn't look bad. And it's called, they have this thing, it's a street food, but tofu is big in Taiwan. And they have this thing that they call, it's called stinky tofu. And it basically smells
that
like,
that sounds good. That sounds appetizing.
Yeah, it smells horrible. It smells like trash. And they do that on purpose. Like they call it that. It's like their funny thing. Every time I go over there, they're like, oh, have some stinky tofu. I'm like, okay, I've been here a whole bunch of times. The joke is old. Like I understand that it doesn't taste bad, but it smells like dog shit. So that was probably one of the worst things that I had. The other stuff was pretty standard.
Stinky tofu is like the New York pizza of Taiwan. Like it's the food you got to get when you go over there.
Well, it's more like a joke food. They mess with tourists essentially with the stinky tofu. Like, I don't think pizza is actually a delicious and smells delicious.
But is it what they're known? Is it what they're known for? Or are they known for something?
No,
else?
I wouldn't say that they're not. I wouldn't say that they're known for stinky tofu by any means. Okay. I would say they're more known for just like fish in general. Like the fish is phenomenal over there, but the tofu is definitely something that it takes you aback because when you eat it, it's actually not bad. It's pretty good. But when you smell it, you're like, I would never put that in my body ever.
Yeah.
It's
and you don't
horrible.
Seem like, obviously you ate the stinky tofu. You ate that thing that was still moving on your plate a couple years ago. So you seem like somebody that's willing to try different things.
Oh yeah. I'll pretty much eat anything. I mean, there's really not much I won't try. So especially if I'm in a foreign country around, people that I'm doing business with and they're offering me food, like, yeah, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah. I mean,
if I go back for seconds, that's another tale.
Yeah. If it's like a delicacy or something that country is known for, I'll at least give it a bite. I'll see what it's about. And if I like it, I'll eat more of it. If I don't, that's it. I'll move on.
So the moving food last year it was in like a hot soup and it was basically just like mussels going back and forth. It was not alive at that
no,
point.
I
it looked
know.
Like it was alive.
It looked like it was alive.
It certainly looked like it was alive. That actually tasted really good. That was delicious.
It did actually look good, except for the fact that the things were still squirming back and forth on the plate. But
no, it was in like a really good garlic sauce. Had some like pepper in there. It got a little kick. It was actually really good. The worst thing I've ever had over there was jellyfish. So they serve jellyfish and I don't remember I don't remember exactly how it was prepared, but it's like equivalent to eating gristle from chicken. Like if you, the gristle on that's exactly what it tastes like to me. It was just like there's nothing there. Like,
well, jellyfish isn't
I'm
even really like an organism. It's weird. It's like a tendon. Yeah, it's like one of the craziest animals or mammals, whatever the hell it is, on Earth. It's like
jellyfish
is
a mammal.
I don't know what it is.
I have a hard time believing it's a mammal. It's like it's an exoskeleton, isn't it? Anyway, it's disgusting to eat. It's really like I don't even get bothered by texture or. It's more like when you're eating it, it's eating gristle. I guess that's also where my mind went. And when my mind went there, I was done like that now I'm toast. Mm-hmm. So it's, there's something about that didn't get me, but everything else really good. Like the sushi, ridiculous. Most of the fish is just phenomenal. So, I'm happy about that. It was a very short trip. I actually missed my flight on the way up. Because of fog, we couldn't. It's a long story, but there were a lot of missed connection flights. I almost got escorted out of an airport by security because I got into a verbal altercation with the lady at the desk who was being horrible.
How long were you
it
in the airport?
Absolutely
at that point?
Not my fault. What?
How long were you in the airport at that point? Because there's a certain number of hours after you spend in an airport where you lose your mind and all rationale goes out the window and you'll argue with anyone.
It wasn't even that long, but there were three flights that got canceled up until that point. And then this was the final one at like 9:30 and everybody's like We're all going home. We understand we're not getting out of here. And everybody is going up to like rebook their flights with this person. And she was up there alone. And she had an attitude from the beginning with the first person. Like there was, you could tell that like she was not ready to talk to anybody. And there was a line of like 20 to 25 people and nobody knew where their bags were. They were on the plane. Like, so I literally like kind of like raised my hand and then can I ask a general question? Cause we're all in line. Can you tell us just where our bags were going to be? So we don't have to wait in line if we're not going to rebook a ticket. And then it's just, sir, we are going to be cordial here. We are going to be cordial. I am a supervisor. And I'm like, oh my God, woman. Ooh. Like you. Yeah. So I'm like looking down and then I didn't say a damn word after that. And she came back to me like a solid 30 seconds later, came back to me and like started saying something. I'm like, all right, well, that's it. now you've come at me. Now you've, you started back with me. So it's on, woman. And that's when she said that I'm going to get security. I'm like, go ahead. I'm like, so.
And then you immediately regretted that decision. You're like, hey, you know what? I'll walk out of here on my own. Thank you very much.
No, you know, the next person went up and it's like, oh, can I get my bag? She's like, oh, get a bit baggage claim. I'm like, she's like, you just yelled at this man who was asking for the rest of us. And that's when I really like started letting her have it after that. I'm like, I'm leaving anyway. Let's go out with a bang.
Maybe your face annoyed her or something.
It was pretty bad, but yeah, then I finally got there. So it was a very short trip in Taiwan, which like your body like barely gets used to it when you're there. And then I'm turning around and leaving. So, when I got back on Thursday, Friday, I was just kind of a wreck as far as like where my head was and what time it was and when I'm supposed to sleep and all that stuff. So,
but it's pretty cool. You were on the other side of the planet and met up with a listener of the show, a Yankees fan. It's just, like you see the reach, and you know, by no means are we the biggest podcast, you know, on iTunes or anything like that, but just the fact that there's a Yankees fan who listens to this show who is willing to meet up with you in Taiwan is just friggin' awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Chris is lives in Taiwan, was in New York for a while, and it was awesome. We went to a little speakeasy in Taiwan, took me to like a cool bar with a couple of his friends as well, and we had a good time, man. We were basically talking Yankees baseball for a while, and we went out. I think we closed out the last bar, and I say I think because we were having a bunch of drinks. But yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. It's one of those things where you meet someone for the first time, and you're like, okay, you know, I'm going to meet someone in a foreign country for the first time, but we have a connection of some sort, you know, and like immediately it was like super easy. Like we got along really well and we started passing stories. Then it turns out we were actually online in 1996 for World Series tickets around Yankee Stadium. We were both online when the riot happened and like all hell broke loose and everybody ran towards like the, like there were cops like beating people with their sticks. Like it was crazy. And because the line wrapped twice around the stadium and, you know, at some point somebody tried to jump a line or whatever, and then all hell broke loose. So we were laughing about that we were both there for the riot trying to get World Series tickets in 96.
Yeah, that's one of those, I don't know, what was that? Sliding doors moment. What does that mean? I've heard that term. That means like your life could have gone one way. I guess that's not really what this is, but that's one of those, that's one of those weird connections that you, like you'll meet somebody down the line 10, 15 years later. And you're like, oh, you were there too?
Yeah, in Taiwan. I mean, like, right. On the other side of the world.
Right.
So, yeah, it was one of those, because half the time, it was funny because when I think about that time and I think about, like, what exactly happened and the specifics of that night, like, I tell the story, but I'm not 1,000% sure that I remembered it correctly. So I was like, maybe I embellished this in my head. Like, it was one of those where you're like, did I or didn't I? And it turns out that I did it. Like we had the exact same memory. I was like, yes, boxes are being checked right now. I'm getting a lot more confident with telling my stories from then, because apparently I am remembering it correctly.
Well, that the see 96, the late 90s, that was still in the time where things could happen and they're not viral. They're not online. They're not posted everywhere for everyone to see. So that happens now. And there's 1,000 Twitter videos about what's going on. So you actually get the story of what happened. Yeah. Whereas that it's just, you're hearing it, you know,
you're at the mercy of my memory and how I want to I want to embellish it.
And it's probably a telephone game moment where every time you tell the story or everyone who says, oh, did you hear about this? Something is slightly changed or exaggerated.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it was pretty spot on actually, and I was nice. Impressed by that. So it was really cool. It was really cool, and we had just a lot of things to talk about, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Well, you know what else you missed while you were away is that we announced last week that there's going to be a new Bronx Pinstripes show. Not a copy of this show, but JJ and Keith are going to be launching their own podcast. It's going to come out later this month. Have you heard about this news yet?
Yeah, I have heard about this news. In fact, I played matchmaker on this little pairing. I'm excited for that. I'm glad we were. Appreciate JJ for coming on last week. He did a bang up job. I got to tell you about I got to put my two cents in on this couple, by the way, that's getting married as well, because that was a very, very controversial topic. And I know a lot of people were going to, I emailed her immediately when I saw this. I actually emailed back. I'm like, you can't trust this guy. I'm fully on board with what JJ said. I mean, it's, you absolutely cannot trust this guy as far as you could throw him.
See,
I don't know how you grow up a Mets fan, and like you both said, he wasn't really a Mets fan.
See, this is
and
why
he's not really a Red Sox fan. So
no, he's not. He's nothing. He's a
fan
of.
But
of
then,
neither.
But then, guess what? Don't claim allegiances, okay? Because you're doing that now, and I'm also not trusting you for that. Like, why are you declaring yourself as this when you're really not?
Right. That's what I would be more upset about, is this guy's a fake fan and he's a poser, and I don't like fake people.
He's got a lot of new hats.
You don't care about sports, you don't care about baseball or football or whatever it is, fine. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to try and change your mind. But don't pretend.
Don't act like you do. It's just one of those things that nobody appreciates. And you will be exposed very fast.
I was expecting an update from marrying a Sox fan. I want her to email us back and know what she thought of the answer. And, you know, I reread the question, and I actually think she was asking about how she deals with both families.
She was definitely not asking anything we were talking about.
No.
but that's what
she was like, how do I make sure that there's no fights at a wedding between two different fan bases? And what I say to that is,
don't get married.
Just don't bring it up, because there's going to be drinking involved. So talk about something else. Yeah. But we did not answer her question at all.
No. I mean, it was hard to get to the actual question when you saw what was inside it and what was behind it. There were many other things that needed to be unpacked.
So JJ is going to be with us at spring training next weekend. I can't believe spring training is already basically here. Doesn't it seem like it just went by extra fast this year? I know like the season's starting at the end of March, so it's already a little bit condensed, but I just feel like, you know, pitchers and catchers reported yesterday.
Yeah, it definitely went fast. I mean, I lost a week just by traveling all that. I feel like I've been in a time warp, but
I lost a week because I couldn't. Couldn't get out of bed. Couldn't speak.
Yeah, your mouth was wired shut. But it's gone definitely fast, and I think that, and I think part of that is because the amount of storylines aren't as great with the battles. I mean, I know we have a first base battle. That's the pretty much what we're looking at, and then essentially a battle for that last roster spot. But it seems like a lot of things are already set, and we're just kind of like waiting because we want to see how they progress. We can't really take stock in what's happening on the field by the way that they're playing. So we almost like want to fast forward to like, okay, let's just get to this and see if Gary actually is back. Let's see if Bird can actually stay healthy and play. Let's see if Voit wasn't an anomaly. Like we just kind of like want to move past this now and like, let's watch, let's see what actually happens.
Right. And, you know, we get the couple battles like you mentioned, but then like any news that comes out, you're kind of like, like holding your breath that it's not bad news. And we had some bad news last week. Everything had been so good for the Yankees up until the Severino and Hicks news. And I know maybe they're not as serious as we initially thought, which is good. We're going to get into all that. I just want to first tell people about Sleep Number. So maybe you've considered Sleep Number bed, but thought you couldn't afford one. But can you really afford another restless night's sleep? Scott, you're probably exhausted from just traveling back and forth. Were you flying first class? That's another thing I needed to know.
I was not flying first class, but it was essentially business.
Okay, business class. That's not bad.
Yeah.
There's never been a better time to save on proven quality sleep now during the Ultimate Sleep Number event. Queen 360 smart beds start at only $899. One thing, you know, couples disagree on mattress firmness, or maybe pillow firmness. They sent us a couple of those pillows, and like I said a couple weeks ago, you can actually adjust the pillow just like you can adjust the bed. So if you like it a little bit thinner, you can have that. If you like a little bit of a more plush pillow, you can have that as well. So Sleep Number is all about adjusting and making sure you're comfortable.
Yeah, the 360 beds are very smart. They sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. I wish I had one on my flight because I could not sleep. The Sleep Number has been ranked highest in customer satisfaction with mattresses by JD Power. For 2018 award information, visit jdpower.com and you can check out their rankings. Come in during the Ultimate Sleep Number event and save 50% on a Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx to find the nearest one close to you.
So JD Power ranks beds and like trucks?
JD Power ranks everything.
Do they?
JD, if you want to rank it,
do they rank home
JD
run
Power.
Hitters? Will they say who the best, who the most powerful home run hitter is in baseball?
It's a pretty good. I mean, it fits, right? They should actually sponsor like the Silver Slugger Award.
Yeah, or the Home Run Derby or something.
Or the Home Run Derby. I mean, come on, sponsored by JD Power makes a lot of sense.
Right.
A lot of sense.
Luis Severino, there was panic in the streets for a brief moment. He was scratched from his first spring training start on Tuesday. Apparently what happened is he was warming up. We don't know if he was warming up quickly or not because, you know, he has an issue with the times. I think maybe this year they'll be a little bit more clear to him on when he needs to warm up so that he gets there on time. Regardless, he was warming up, felt discomfort, shut it down, which is the thing to do. You don't want him to try and power through it on, you know, March 5th for a spring training start. People were freaking out, understandably. He's the Yankees' best pitcher. I don't think they can win a World Series without Luis Severino. But they're shutting him down for 2 weeks. He's going to miss the start of the season. Let's just hope that's all it is.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we're talking about panic in the streets this early. I mean, we mentioned earlier about news in spring training. There's never really good news that comes out of spring training. It's always just bad disasters that come out because otherwise, it's really not news. I mean, people, they show up, they play, and you hope that there's no news about injuries and such. So when you start hearing things like this, like, that's not good. This is worrisome to me because when you're this early and you're starting to get ready for a season and you're already coming up with tightness or, you know, discomfort or anything having to do with the shoulder and it not being 100% is alarming to me. So, the MRI came back and it was clean and things look like it was, you know, just an inflammatory issue and it got inflamed for, yep. But why did it get inflamed? Why did this happen?
Well, so Cashman was talking about this. He was on radio last week doing his rounds and he was talking about it and he kind of made it seem like it could just be the reaction that Severino's body was having to not having thrown all winter, you know,
I guess. And I mean, that could be. And if that's the case and it's just something natural that, you know, that heals up fast with time, then great. But it's still alarming to me, and it puts me in an uneasy place.
Of course,
when I think about Severino, because we know how he had that. You know, there was a stretch in time last season where he was not the same guy, and he was not the guy that we need him to be. So, starting out with an injury like this, it's not really an injury, but it's something. It's a blip on the radar at this point.
It's definitely something.
But let's hope it just stays that way.
Last year, second half, he wasn't the same guy. Is that because he was feeling tightness in his arm and was pitching through it?
There was fatigue. I mean, that was definitely part of it. They talk about fatigue.
He was, I think, sort of talking about just general overall body fatigue versus arm fatigue because his velocity was still up. But as you know, as we've talked to different, media members or whoever just read that if your legs are slightly fatigued, then your arm is going to be lagging. Your mechanics could be slightly off. So yeah, you could still be throwing 99 miles an hour, but it's not the same movement or not the same location if you're slightly fatigued, even just like 5-10%.
No, exactly. I mean, it starts with your feet and it goes all the way up. If something is off, then it's going to throw off the muscle memory of your body and the way that you do things and the way that you've learned your mechanics and you know how to repeat the motion over and over and over again. And that's what makes you such an effective pitcher. And these guys that come to the major league level, the majority of them are able to repeat that motion over and over and over. And that's why they're so effective. So once you start getting fatigue in any part of your body, it can throw those things off and then send you down a spiral. And I think that is part of what we saw. I mean, he's definitely been open and talked about that, the fact that there was a fatigue and mechanics got blown off. So this is just something we have to monitor. You know what I mean? Like there's no injury to watch really. There's just, if his arm feels good the next time he throws and then he ramps it up and continues to ramp it up, he's essentially missed spring training at this point. I mean, he's going to have to start over basically from square one now. So now we have to just see how how his new spring training starts.
And you know how Yankees Twitter do, and they go to this conspiracy theory immediately and say, oh, maybe that's the reason he was so quick to sign that $40 million extension. He knew something was up in his arm. Let me get paid while I still can. I think the encouraging thing is obviously they did an MRI when he signed that extension. Nothing was abnormal about that. Nothing was really out of the ordinary about the MRI after the injury, except the minor inflammation, like you mentioned. So I'm really just trying to tell myself this is a minor setback right now and to not freak out, because I wanted to freak. Like, you want me to freak out? I'll freak out.
I'll go down that road. I will go down that road. Don't ask me twice.
Don't ask me twice to freak out. But I don't think we're at the freak out point yet.
No, we're not.
This is when I'll freak out. They said they're shutting him down for 2 weeks. If he comes back after those 2 weeks and then tries to warm up or tries to make a start in spring training and has to come out because of soreness again, all bets are off at that point. Who knows how long it's going to be after that. I'll freak out then if and when that happens.
If there's another shutdown on the next comeback, essentially the next spring training pocket, if you will, then they're going to shut him down for a lot longer. And yeah, that's going to be a much longer and more serious amount of time, because then they think there's something else going on, you know, and you know, God forbid something else, you know, he feels something else besides the shoulder, something that's connected to the shoulder. Like, there's a whole lot of things that could go wrong. So I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but yeah, we need to see how he recovers. If he can come back and be healthy on this next, on the first go, then we're good. But if there's any setbacks, then yes, that's very, very bad news.
And the Yankees are 2-for-2 with their extended guys getting scratched with soreness and stiffness.
They obviously got together and had dinner. Like, yo, you're not. I heard through one of the guys that your arm is kind of feeling something. Like, I feel something in my back. We should both approach as guys that want to get extended and do this together with team friendly deals. They'll never see it coming.
Right. Maybe Hicks and Severino should just both go to that massage parlor down. No, never mind. Hicks was scratched with back stiffness. Tweaked it during batting practice. MRI was clean on him as well. He was maybe going to come back this weekend. This weekend, we're recording on Sunday. He did not come back this weekend. Boone said he's going to come back after Monday's off day is when Hicks should be back in the lineup. So here's the thing on Hicks. We know he's the type of guy who can get a little tweak every now and again. Hamstring, quad, you know, didn't he have a rib cage or oblique issue a couple years ago? So, you know, extending him for 7 years, that's going to be an issue always with Hicks.
Yeah.
I think if this were June 15th and he felt a little back stiffness, maybe they keep him out of the lineup for one day, but then he's back the next day. But it's spring training. It's the beginning of spring training. They're not taking any chances. Oh, no. You feel a little sore? Okay, shut it down.
Right.
Come back in a week.
And I'm totally on board with that. I think that's exactly how they should do it this early in spring. You know, like, back, I don't know where everybody else's mind goes, but when I see back stiffness with Aaron Hicks, I'm like, oh, how many rounds of golf you been playing, bro? Like, what else is happening here?
That torque, he's trying to get out of some deep rough with an 8-iron or something. That'll put a lot of torque on your back.
Andrew, do you not listen to freaking Alex Rodriguez? He's not in high grass. This guy is a scratch golfer.
Yeah, but
fairways.
Scratch golfers even sometimes put it in the rough. I mean, maybe if he's playing some easy courses, but if he's playing from the tips at some of those courses down in Florida, those are tough courses.
Look, if Aaron Hicks has some back stiffness right now and he just needs some time to get up, when you listen to what Boone, the way he talks about it as well, it's nothing. It's literally just like a little bit of nothing. Yeah, but just even the mannerisms you're talking about, it, like, it looked like there was zero concern. So I'm not worried about this
come,
at all.
He's not going to come into a press conference like DEFCON 5, like, oh shit, Aaron Hicks is out of the lineup.
You can read the body language a little bit when you're seeing some of these guys, and this one is nothing. So I'm not concerned about this. Plus, like, the guy, you know, soft tissue injuries are nothing for him at this point. You know, he has them when he gets out of bed every day.
Is back stiffness considered soft tissue?
I think so. I think that's where the actual stiffness comes from, doesn't it? In the around the spine, in the muscle.
How can you have stiffness and soft tissue at the same time?
It's an oxymoron. It's an oxymoron. It is. The soft tissue becomes stiff.
I think we need to get a doctor on to explain
the firmness.
This to us.
It's the firmness factor.
It's a mattress.
You can't adjust
firmness?
It like you can. You can't adjust it like you can a Sleep Number bed.
Ooh, that's a good callback. Boone said Tanaka is going to get the opening day start in place of Severino. People were saying maybe the big Maple Paxton will get it, but I understand Tanaka. He was the guy before Severino. Give it to Tanaka. So the season's going to start with Tanaka, Paxton, Happ. And I actually think that if Sabathia were healthy and not delayed the spring training and did not have to serve that suspension for the issue in Tampa last year, I actually think they would have given it to Sabathia for his last hurrah.
I mean, it's probably true. It would have been like a celebratory first, because, you know, when you're leading the season off, you know, at home, like that's an honor to do that. So I could have absolutely seen that. And he probably would have pitched 7-inning shutout ball too. I mean, right. It would have been a gem.
Certainly not just 5 innings, because
no,
it would all have been he's going to be doing this year is 4 to 5 innings.
But no, I mean, this one makes a lot of sense. I think if you're a Yankees fan, you expected it to be Tanaka. If Severino is not healthy, you know, I don't think you give it immediately to the new guy by any means. You're not trying to, you know, give him the torch right away. So yeah, Tanaka's the guy. I mean, Tanaka is also, you know, we're seeing some interesting things from Tanaka now, like working on a new pitch, little knuckle curve, little Mike Mussina, maybe inspiration from the Hall of Fame.
I'm still waiting for a gyro ball. I want him to try that Dice K gyro ball.
Yeah, that's really good for the elbow. I don't want anything to do with that.
Do you remember that? Do you remember when Dice K came over and everyone was talking about the gyro ball? It moves like an extreme screwball.
Yeah.
He never once threw it. I never saw a gyro ball.
I mean, there was there, but it was a fork ball. It was like, you know, it's the ball they think. Didn't it rise? Didn't they say it rose?
No.
No, but the gyro ball had multiple movements. It was like a.
It was a wiffle ball essentially. It was like a knuckle ball that was fast and also went up then left. It was like that. It was like that cheat code.
Put its blinker on and made a right turn.
It was like that cheat code in Tony Hawk Skater Number One: up, down, left, left, right. It's like that. Those were the movements as it went into the strike zone.
But you know, trying to get some more separation, I think, with his fastball and the breaking ball, throwing in that knuckle curve, not a bad idea. Like, I think you can get that separation between the fastball and your breaking stuff. We saw when he started throwing his fastball again last year towards, you know, the middle end of the season, he was more effective when he was throwing it more consistently, and then, you know, breaking, moving it in and out and mixing it in with that breaking ball. So a little bit more separation and speed, I think, is a good thing. If he can control that pitch and more downward motions, I think in some of his breaking pitches, all good stuff for Tanaka. So I like that he's tweaking with his arsenal.
Yeah. I'm just looking for Tanaka, how he comes out in the first half of the season, because the last 2 years have not been good. So what do we see? I mean, if Tanaka is going to be a pitcher who shows up in the second half and is strong through the playoffs, like, I'm fine with that. But we need a little bit more from him, especially with the way the rotation is. You know, I don't know. We don't know how long Sabathia and Severino are going to be delayed. Right now, the rotation is Tanaka, Paxton, Happ, and then you're looking at Sessa or Loaisiga or Herman or an opener. Boone talked about maybe possibly using an opener this year. So they've got 3 established starting pitchers, Tanaka, Paxton, Happ. They're going to need those guys to be strong early in the season, because the back end of the rotation is not going to be strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be strong on paper. You never know when. Well,
I still think
Herman, I mean, I talked about Herman a few weeks ago as like the guy I could see taking that next step, just because we're looking at, you know, he's got to put it together. I mean, even in his last start, and I know you can't really take anything away from the way that you have a performance in spring training, but it was almost like same guy, different day, in the sense that he starts out strong. Like, you see glimpses of like unhittable stuff. I think he struck out the side, made people look really dumb. And then, you know, he gets behind counts and like runners on, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a couple runs in and runners all over the place. That was what he did last year. Like, he would work through the fourth and into the fifth and then get in some trouble, and then it would, the wheels would fall off. It's like he never was able to really put together multiple starts in a row. And that's the next step for him. If he can do that, I mean, he's got some of the best stuff in the bigs. We talk about the swing and miss ratio.
Yeah, so
it's crazy.
Yeah, I saw a stat last week. He ranked 9th in the majors for at least 80 innings pitched for swinging strike percentage, ninth in the majors. So we talked about that last year. Like, we were Herman guys from the beginning, right? We'd look at the stuff and we'd say he's getting the swings and misses, which is so key in today's game. Strike, you know, today's game is about strikeouts and walks and home runs. If you can strike people out, you can be successful in today's game. But like you said, he could not put it together. He'd fall into trouble, wasn't able to get out of that trouble. Yeah. Next step for Herman is certainly possible. I think they both they like Herman and Loaisiga, I think, as the two starting pitchers to take that next step this year. I don't know. They keep talking about Sessa. Isn't he
out? Because when you look at Sessa too, I mean, I know a lot of people get frustrated with Luis Sessa because usually it's because of the roles that he's in. And he's a similar guy in the sense that where he can get a couple innings and then all of a sudden the wheels fall off and he implodes. But if you're looking at raw stuff again, like
yeah, you look at Sessa.
He's got the pitches.
Sessa, I don't think has that same sort of like eye test, right? You look at Sessa and you look at Herman. I think you can see a difference.
No, you can definitely see a difference. But Sessa definitely has enough pitches to be successful in the major leagues if he were to gain that consistency. And that's it. He doesn't have the consistency to be an effective starter in the major leagues at a consistent level at this point. Like, the consistencies within his starts are not there. And you look at a guy like Herman, and I think it was the inning where he struck the side out. You know, this is what I love about him. I mean, he's got a little bit of a, you know, I'm not going to go as far as saying it, that he's not by any means the same pitcher, but he's got a little bit of like the El Duque. He does. He's got that. He changes speeds a ton and he's fun to watch because he throws at different arm angles. You see, like, he struck out a guy with an 80 mile an hour changeup up in the zone. There aren't very many guys who throw a changeup up in the zone. And when you have,
that's not by accident. He did not try and do that.
There are times when you can throw a changeup up in the zone like he did and make a guy look really dumb.
Yeah, because
it looks like a fastball.
It's a mistake pitch.
No, that's not true. A lot of times you can throw it up in the zone and it looks like the fastball. If you have the ball coming out of your hand and you throw an 80 mile an hour quote ethos or changeup, whatever you want to call it, and it's coming out that slow, but it looks fast, you could see guys look really dumb thinking it's a high fastball. And that's what happened. I mean, he struck a guy out on a high changeup. And that just, I think that proves to you how effective his stuff is, though. That proves to you how good the separation is and how, you know, his fastball looks like his changeup. And like that's a telling sign that a guy would swing at that pitch.
Yes. And is the swing and miss stuff an aberration? Was it an aberration last year? Was there some sort of deception that hitters just could not figure out? Or is it a sign of his potential and things to come? I think that's what we're looking to find out this year.
And I do think it's a sign of the way he throws. It's just a matter of, you know, don't leave the 2-0 fastball over the plate, or don't leave the don't try to get too cute with an 0-2 pitch and leave a hanger. It's stuff like that where I think he's not executing and he's getting hit.
So the opener, Boone sort of teased the media. He said, "Yeah, we will consider. We could see scenarios where the Yankees will use an opener in 2019." Do you think this is just him saying that we're open to any possibility, or is it him saying that with the way the rotation looks at the beginning of the year, with some of, you know, our two of the five out, that an opener might be a solution instead of a fill-in starter?
Yeah, I think this is a temporary Band-Aid. This is not a Tampa Bay Devil Rays situation where we're going into the season and we're, you know, slotting 2 or 3 days of the, or 3 or 4 days of the week to an opener. Like, no, that's not going to happen. And I don't think I think that would be all hell broke loose and worst case scenario if that were to be a long-term solution.
Well, what about using an opener on a getaway day, which, you know, all of your bullpen guys are going to get the next day off, and that gives your starters a little bit more time in between starts, which could just keep them more fresh throughout the season.
Some starters don't want that extra time, though. Most of these guys, I'd say, especially the ones that are, you know, at their peak age and at their peak physical abilities, and they have a routine that they go through, and they have the same days in between their starts or very close to it. They don't want that extra day. Like, they want to get into their routine.
They say that, but at the same time, think about the five starting pitchers in this rotation. Sabathia certainly could use the extra rest. Tanaka, we always talk about how he is better on at least full 5 days rest. Paxton, it could use it because he's never pitched a whole season healthy. Hap's a little bit older, and they're going to try and keep Severino fresh any way they can.
I'm just telling you the way that some of these guys think. Like they once they get into their groove, they want to stay in that groove. And you know, who's to say that Paxton, you know, can't get into a good groove and then stay in that groove. Like I don't know if extra time would help him out. It might not help him out. It might be, you know, contrary to that point and throw him off. And then you start seeing mechanical changes or issues where he's overthrowing and leads to injury. So I think also the routine is a protector for some of these guys because they are then able to, you know, go through a lot of the same motions and there's not, you know, different feelings that they have on if they had like 8 days rest.
And I also don't know what their bullpen. I think their bullpen is going to be the best in baseball, but it's also a bunch of guys who are most successful for three outs at a time. And a lot of times when we saw the opener last year, especially from Tampa, they would have one of their pitchers go multiple innings. I don't know who that guy would be in this Yankees bullpen. It's certainly not going to be Dellin Betances. We know it's not going to be Dellin Betances. So who would it be? I don't think they'd use Chapman in that role. Who would that guy be that goes multiple innings in an opener scenario?
It could be Chad Green. I think Chad Green has the ability to do that. We saw his use, you know, with Girardi, we saw him more of a two inning guy,
and he was better. He was better in 17 than he was in 18 as a multi inning guy, and then multiple days off versus right. What Boone used him as more of a one inning guy, maybe come back the next day.
Yeah, and you know, obviously he started out as a starting pitcher, and he's had the workload in the past of being a starting pitcher, so you know he's more used to it. In the most recent history. But yeah, I think when you're looking at who's been effective in multiple inning situations, immediately you got to go to Chad Green because he's been that guy before and been highly effective. So I think he would be the guy to circle.
Are you against the Yankees using an opener? I'm not saying like an opener every week, but an opener in certain situations, not just in April when they need it, but at, you know, sporadically throughout the season to either give guys extra days off or because it just makes sense on that day. Are you against it?
Yes, I think an opener is created out of a necessity. And if something is wrong, if there's not a better situation for a starter to slot in there, then you can look at that. But I don't think it's something that you should plan for. No, I don't like that as a strategy. When you have, if all five guys are effective and healthy at that point, even if they're not the most effective and you think you could get better out of it, you just throw so many things off when you start doing that because a lot of things can go wrong. And if it goes wrong on a day you're doing an opener, you could knock out, you know, five or six guys out of your bullpen at that point. And then what? And then you're setting your whole rotation back. You're putting everybody in a position where they have to be too perfect. There's just a lot of, I don't like the bad. I don't like the things that can go wrong. So that's part of the reason why I don't like it. I think there's just too many opportunities for things to go bad that have trickle down effect.
What if Sabathia is essentially an opener though? What if he's a 3-4 inning guy? I mean, that's slightly more than an opener, but they'd still have to burn through multiple relievers in a Sabathia start.
I mean, yeah, if I'm being very honest, that's why I didn't bring him back in my offseason plan, because I think he could be that at some point. But I mean, I don't think they obviously feel good enough about him where they like him going five, right? And like that's the number. We all look at five innings. If we get five innings out of Sabathia, that's kind of like where we need him. If he can go further than that, then awesome. But I think five is where the expectation limit is. You start going three and four, then you're really flirting with, are you going three or four effective innings and then getting pulled? Or are you going three or four and then like just getting out of the fourth? Because there's a difference there. And if you're going three or four and you're effective through then, why are you not going out for five? So to me, if he's going three or four, something's going wrong.
Well, yeah, but we saw at times last year where Sabathia looked great through three or four and then hit a wall.
So you're saying like analytics driven 3-4, if whether he's effective, it's a very effective pull him.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult call for Boone and the management to make because you have all the data that tells you X number of pitches or X number of innings or whatever, and then Sabathia is no longer as effective. Plus what you're looking at on the field. It could be a certain start or against a certain crummy team like the Baltimore Orioles. And you're like, well, this guy has 58 pitches through five innings. Like he's still good to go out there. So
It's tough. I do think that on certain situations, if there's a close game and you're going into the fifth inning or your fourth inning and his pitch count's going up and you see a situation where, you know, there's a big right-handed bat who's had success off of him and you know, maybe he's not as sharp as he would, that then, yeah. Like, I could see them, because of the embarrassment of riches, what they have in their bullpen, I could see them or Boone trying to go for a guy to put out a fire in a situation like that and pull him early. So I think we will see it throughout the season. I don't think it's going to be like a something they're looking at as a norm, 3-4, pull him even on a day he's effective. But I think it'll be more situational in who's going to be up, who's on the base path, and what the game situation is at that point. Because they do have a bullpen that is, you know, so deep where they could get through a game like that from, you know, the fourth and fifth inning on if it were a close game and they want to, you know, sneak out a win there.
Right, their bullpen is different than most bullpens, where most bullpens could not throw out eight guys and get and feel just as good about them for those eight innings. You know what I mean? Where it's like every guy can give you a dominant inning. There's not many bullpens like that.
What I don't want to see, though, is what we saw in the playoffs, where, yeah, statistics were telling you that he's going to go X amount of pitches or X amount of innings, and then we're going to pull him because that's what our numbers are saying. And then just stay with him because that was your plan, and go with it because, oh, we're going to let him get to the bottom of the lineup because we're going to get greedy, try to get a couple outs so that we can bring in the guy that I want at the top and face the top of the order.
Getting greedy in the playoffs is asinine. I don't know why Boone did that, but I also I know you're referring to this for the regular season, but assuming all five of those guys are healthy this coming October, Sabathia does not get a start in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, that's so far down the line, it's impossible to
say. It's impossible to say, but on paper, all we can do is play this out on paper. He is not getting a start in the playoffs.
No. But I'm also talking about the regular season. I am talking about the regular season, and I know it's not the same thing as the playoffs. But at the same time, I don't want that mentality of being like, all right, this is where we're going to go. It's really just the managerial strategy that I don't like, in the sense that this is what I'm going to do ahead of time. I have a plan. It's almost looking at, you know, going back to Joe's binder, like, this is what the binder says on this day, and I have to do this. I don't like that. I want you to read the situation. If your numbers are telling you that, yeah, he should be effective through the bottom of the order, the guys don't have enough, but you're looking at it and he's gassed and he's leaving pitches up and we're just not seeing the same guy, pull him. If you have better options on that given day, pull him.
And the earlier, simple as that. The earlier Sabathia comes out of games, the more time he has to be an ESPN analyst.
Right. Well, I don't know how you can. I don't know how a baseball player has enough time to become an analyst on a network like that.
If you're
that,
a starting pitcher, you got four out of 5 days off, and he's in New York. He's right there. Things. I mean, ESPN headquarters is in Connecticut. It's not a far little commute for him. I don't know how much he's going to be doing in season. The reports were initially that he's going to start it this season. But I think this is obviously a setup for post baseball, just like the podcast.
Exactly. I mean, he's definitely going into media. Like, the podcast, to me, as far as the flexibility and the fact that, you know, Ruco's there and they usually record in the stadium. Like, there's a lot of things that are just super easy for that. You know, traveling and going to studios and doing all that. That's just extra stuff that I'm not sure I want him doing.
So are you going to bust out your number 22 jersey for next weekend? Because Ellsbury might be in the building when we're there.
My Jimmy Key jersey? Or your
Roger Clemens or your Cano. Or, you know, there's a lot of... Number 22 for the Yankees is a long history.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't believe it. They say he's going to be there, this guy they call Ellsbury, on the days that we're going to be in spring training, which I don't appreciate.
I think that's a little shot across our bow.
At the same time, I don't believe it. So,
well, I mean, the physical therapy must have worked because
No. This is just like we have to say this and put on a public front for the insurance companies. So they're not trying to get busted.
No,
for fraud.
The insurance companies. No. This is complete opposite. If they just want to collect the insurance, then keep him away. He can't even get on a plane. Insurance, you got to pay for this.
Yeah, but they have to put on a front saying that they're trying. It's like when if you lose your job and you're trying to collect unemployment, like you got to act like you're trying to get a job.
I got you. I feel you.
So, you know, we're that's what we're looking at here. And
you can't
just
be flaunting. You can't just be watching like Netflix all day. You gotta at least apply.
Yeah, I mean,
apply
the Yankees
yourself, Ellsbury.
the Yankees just bought back the Yes Network. They got a lot to lose right now. They got Jeff Bezos and Amazon on their team now. So there's a lot to lose with an insurance fraud case here. We got to make it look real.
Yeah, I also do like our plan that we came up with in the Facebook chat of drones just delivering beer and everything in the stadium. I think that's a good plan.
Yeah, I think this drone might be able to help out our Ellsbury situation too, you know?
Although, you know, guys like Cousin Brewski, I don't want to see them out of work.
No, I don't want to see them. I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence in Cousin Brewski, you know, with a remote control.
Operating a drone might get in the way of some fly balls.
He's an old school guy, man. He likes to deliver that beer in person, and you get a story along with it. So I like that much better than the drone.
Right. Tyler Wade, so also reports are that he's going to make the team once again as the super utility man. He made the team last year on opening day. He played in, got 38 plate appearances in April. He slashed 086, 158, 143. I tweeted this out on Saturday, got a lot of conversation going about it, and I totally forgot about this, but he was dealing with some sort of virus last April that apparently affected his performance because he did come up later in the season and played better. The caveat to all of this Wade stuff is he has never got consistent at-bats in the majors. So it's always small sample sizes. But I don't see how Wade is ever going to get consistent at-bats in the majors unless he starts hitting in these small samples. You know what I mean? It's like a chicken or the egg scenario with Tyler Wade because he's not a guy they're just going to give, here's your starting second base job, Tyler Wade. The Yankees, I mean. Like, he might get consistent playing time if he gets traded, but for the Yankees, he's always going to be this utility guy that's never going to get consistent at-bats. So unless he hits in this sporadic playing time, I don't see how he's ever going to stick on this roster.
All right, so I totally disagree, and I'll tell you why. And this is the exact scenario that I laid out earlier on when we were talking about how this roster is going to shape out and what's going to happen with the shortstop, the second base, like all of these things. Do we have to rely on Troy Tulowitzki? Like all of these things that are giant question marks. I don't think they care about Tyler Wade's offense as much. Yes, would it be nice? Would it be great if he could get on base more often and do things so that he could get on, so that he could, you know, take advantage of those legs and the good base running and all that? That would be icing on the cake. That would be the cherry on top. What I think they really need Tyler Wade to be is an elite defender, a guy that could be flexible in the field to play a role on this roster, to give the guys that they want with the big sticks the ability to stay on the field. And that would mean Tyler Wade going in late inning situations, playing some defense at multiple positions so that they can keep their guys fresh. I think that's what he's going to be. I think that any offense at all would be a bonus.
No,
so
he can't have a 200 on base percentage. He can't.
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter as much.
I'm sorry. It does. You can't have a pitcher level hitter. You just can't.
Look, when you're talking about run prevention and you're talking about going out there and playing good defense in a time where you want Tulowitzki up at the plate and not, you know, having as many innings in the field, then that is a value to the team. When you see a guy that can play third, short, second, any outfield position, like that is a huge value. And what it does is it allows Boone to go out there and spell anybody at any given time for defense. And usually when you're in that position, when you're trying to spell a guy for defense, you either have a lead, you're in a situation where you just need to keep the runs off the board. And that's where the value is. Like, I don't think he's going to be, yes, he's going to get probably, if he makes the team, he would get a spot start here and there. And of course we want to see some offense. But at the same time, he's not there for his offense. He's there for his flexibility on defense. The fact that he can run the bases, he might get, you know, a pinch hit or a pinch run spot late in the game. Like, he's got value even without the offense. So I do think that there's a very significant value on his team, even when you're talking about zero offense.
He doesn't need to hit 300 like he's done in AAA, but he needs to do better than he's done in the majors because he's going to be hitting ninth. And that means he's going to be up before guys like Aaron Hicks and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. And you don't want somebody with a sub 200 on base percentage in front of those guys.
But again, he's not going to be, that's the thing. Like, he may not be batting ninth because you're not going to see him get very many starts. He's going to be coming into games a lot more often than he would get a start for a game.
Well, that's a different scenario though. And that's also, then he's just here for until Didi comes back.
I see that as a very real thing.
Right. They need to, like I said in the beginning, I don't see how Tyler Wade ever sticks on this roster unless he hits.
Well, even if he hits, I mean, there's even if he hits and we're looking at Troy Tulowitzki's also hitting and then Didi comes back, like the roster spots are not going to be
there. That's going to be tough because then, like, do they just keep Tulo because he's a name and he could, he's a better pinch hitter than Tyler Wade? But Tyler
Wade
would
be if he's hitting.
Right, but all Tulowitzki can do is DH or play shortstop. At least Tyler Wade can play every position.
Right, but you just said Tyler Wade batted 086 last year. He's not a guy that's going to come in there.
He's hitting. If Tyler Wade is giving you some semblance of offense, right?
Well, I mean, I think the only way that there's a discussion of those two guys is if Tulowitzki is not hitting. And if he's not hitting, then what's the point?
There's no point, right?
Yeah, so then if he's not hitting, then yes, Tyler Wade provides more value as a guy that can be more flexible on your roster in multiple ways. And again, I don't think it's tied to his offense, though. I really don't. Like, again, I think it would be great, and I think that he can absolutely improve on an 086, you know, 158, 143. Like, that, those are abysmal numbers. Yeah, I think he's going to have to be better than that, but I don't think he has to be... I think if he's you know, 200 to 230 to 240, they'd be just fine with that. And he's playing good defense all over the
place.
That's
triple what he did last April.
Yeah, I mean, this to 086 is just, it's I don't think that's sustainable. Like, I think he's better than that.
Yes, of course he's better than that. He came up later in the year and was better than that. I know. But
at the same time, it's
not about that. He had a fantastic spring training last year. And then I don't know how much the illness, like I think they used the illness as sort of his get out of jail free card. And I'm fine with that. If he really truly, I think they poisoned him in Toronto. He ate some bagged milk or something like that.
Ellsbury poisoned him. Didn't Ellsbury have something to do with this?
No, they just looked the same.
Yeah. That's why he didn't like it. Did something to him. I don't trust him.
He infected him with his injuries.
Yeah. I don't trust this. No, I mean, just at the end of the day, I really do. I think that Tyler Wade is a valuable piece of this team. But it's because of his defensive flexibility.
Let's talk about the first base battle. So Brian Cashman was also, like I said, he was on radio. He said he would be very surprised if both Bird and Voit were on the opening day roster. And it sounds like Tyler Wade's going to be on the roster instead of one of those guys. That also pissed some people off because they think I called it the Verd battle, which is the combination of the two. If both are hitting, I think a lot of people want to see both on the roster.
Yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have both of these guys on the roster because... you know, they are pigeonholed at one position and that's it. Like, yeah, the DH position could be number two if you want, but there's a lot of competition for that DH position, especially with a guy named Stanton. You know,
and Judge. Cashman said he'd like to see both of those guys split more time between DH and right field to just keep them healthier.
Right. And you're going to see Gary Sanchez in that spot as well. Like, it's going to be a position that is flexible and gives them, you know, wherever they need a guy to have a day off, because we will see Stanton in left field as well. So
Stanton will be the primary DH, but I think we're going to see a handful of guys rotating in and out. I don't see one of those guys being Bird or Voit.
No. And even like, let's say it's not any of those guys that we just mentioned and that it's DJ LeMahieu. And let's say LeMahieu is the guy that they want to get at bats because of the type of at bats that he gives.
That would be weird though, because the whole reason DJ LeMahieu's here is because of his defensive versatility, right? So then you're going to put him in DH? That doesn't make sense to me.
It absolutely makes sense.
Put Andujar at DH.
Well, yeah, you could do that. You could slide him over. But the thing is that LeMahieu gives you a very different at-bat than a lot of these other guys. Like, his on-base percentage helps out the rest of this team. So you have him as the DH doesn't have to be a power guy on this team.
I'm not saying it has to be a power guy.
But I mean, like, traditionally everybody's thinking about a DH, like DJ LeMahieu, DH. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work in my head. But they're also using this guy as somebody who can, you know, set the table for a lot of these other big power guys.
No, but see, it doesn't make sense because he's a positive defender. So if he's going to be starting, I want him in the field.
That I can see that. That makes sense for sure. If you're having him and Andujar there, like, why not put LeMahieu at third?
Right. And they committed. They said when we signed DJ LeMahieu, we commit to you to get regular playing time at multiple positions. That's what Brian Cashman said and told him when he signed on the dotted line.
All right. I mean, I said a lot of things to get people to sign things. You know what I'm saying? But whether they do it or not is another. Now he's under contract.
Well, I know,
He's going to do whatever they damn well tell him.
And obviously, if he's not producing, then he's not going to get playing time. But he obviously had to. He had a brain. He has a brain. His agent has a brain. He's looking at the roster and saying, I'm not just going to sign to be a bench player. I better be playing. So where am I going to play on this
team?
Well,
they also didn't give him money, the amount of money that they did for him to be a bench player either. But my point is that there very well could be other options for DH. It's not just the big power guys. They could slot a number of guys in that spot. So when you have a guy that can only play one position, then you don't have room for two of those guys. That's it.
Right. You ready to talk about your old buddy, Sonny Gray?
My God. He's like the virus that just keeps coming back. He won't go away.
Right. You thought we finally thought we could put this issue to bed, and he just opens his stupid mouth again, blaming the Yankees for his struggles, saying they forced him to throw sliders. And that's why he struggled, because he was always in bad counts. His slider is not like Tanaka's slider, where Tanaka can throw at any sort of count, throw it over the plate, it can be a quality pitch. Sonny Gray did not feel confident in throwing his slider for a strike, so it was either a spinner that would get hit, or it was in the dirt, which would put him in bad counts, thus getting him in trouble. And apparently, he was not man enough, or just could not just decide he doesn't want to throw sliders.
Hold on. You said it right the first time. Don't give him a way out.
Right.
He's not man enough.
One's, you know, what is the definition of insanity?
He's not of a stand-up person either. I mean, there's
trying something over and over again, expecting a different result. So he goes out there, he sees his slider's not working, and he keeps going out there and trying it again. Now, I understand if coaches are telling you something and you disagree with those coaches, that could be a trying scenario, right? That could be a difficult work environment.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
How about you have some preparation? How about we talk about the lack of preparation, the lack of the fact that he never had a routine on his starts? Like, this son of a bitch is out there watching Netflix. The peaky fucking blinders is out there watching that beforehand, rather than studying tape and figuring out where the arm slot needs to be, or you know, going through the motions, you know, whatever. Like, how about we just get better as an athlete? How about we get better as a pitcher and come up with some things that can make you more of a sustainable, you know, top level guy, instead of going out there and just being like, oh, well, they're making me do this. I got to do this. I don't know why. I just can't do what I want. I've always done what I want for my entire career. No one's ever told me that I'm not good. No one's ever told me that I suck. No one's ever booed me. No one's ever held me accountable. No one's ever said, oh, your fastball is not as good as you think it is. You should try to mix in other pitches. Nobody's ever told me that. How dare him? How dare Larry Rothschild try to coach me? How dare the Yankees try to come out there and say that I should do this or I should do that, or the fans boo me? I'm Sonny Gray. I'm the greatest thing it's ever been. I'm the greatest thing. I have great stuff.
It's just
he's such a little bitch, man.
The excuse
he's such a little bitch.
I just think back, and he did suck so much worse at Yankee Stadium than he did on the road. And he asked coaches about that, and they said, I don't know, you're just unlucky. Do you believe they really said that to him?
Probably. I mean, if you look back in his history, I think a lot of people have been telling Sonny Gray what he wants to hear for his entire life. And there aren't very many people that have said, look, kid, this is not what you think it is. The reality, what's actually happening out here and what's happening in your brain are two very different things. And you need to get those two aligned and somehow find out like what's actually happening and then fix it. Because you're not good right now. Your stuff isn't good. You're not good. Your answers suck. You smile when you're not supposed to. There's nothing going right here. Fix it. You're a professional athlete. Professional.
Have some accountability. And I think this is, we're seeing why Brian Cashman in the press conference right after the season ended said Sonny Gray needs to be traded. Because if struggling is one thing. If you struggle, but you work with the coaches and you're working at getting better, I think they will overlook your struggles and say, this guy has talent. We're going to try and make this work. But if you're not willing to put in the work, you're not receptive to the coaching, you make excuses for yourself, that is when I think they have to move on.
Yeah, we compare him and to like the Javi Vasquez version 2. I think we need to throw that out the window, because I remember seeing disgust. I remember seeing visible frustration on Javi Vasquez's face. And I feel like he has earned that much, at least just that he tried.
Well, and also, Brian Cashman was willing to bring him back, right? If Brian Cashman is willing to take another shot on you, that means he at least respects you, right?
Yes,
I don't think Brian Cashman respects Sonny Gray at this point.
I hope he doesn't, and I have a very difficult time thinking he does. Sonny Gray doesn't deserve the respect of a lot of people, I think. I think that when you're looking at the way that he handled himself and the way that he's continuing to talk about this narrative and just act like it's everybody else. Right.
Take some ownership.
You lost me, dude.
Take some ownership. And like I looked at Fangraphs, his slider usage, it did go up with the Yankees. In 2018, he threw 18% sliders. The previous year with the 2017 combined threw 16.1%. 2016, 12%. And going back to 2015, his best season, he threw 15.9% sliders. So
still a significantly high amount of sliders.
It did go up with the Yankees. The biggest difference, though, is his fastball percentage went drastically down with the Yankees, 35% in 2018. With the A's, it was around 50% to 55%. That is a huge difference.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot of times there's a reason for that as well. Like I know Larry Rothschild likes to throw off-speed pitches more, and I'm sure, I guarantee that was part of it. But at the same time, if your fastball isn't as effective as it has been in the past, if it's not the same pitch it was, and you have to do something different, well, then you're going to do something different. You know, make your fastball a better pitch than if you want to throw it more often. Make your slider more effective and more deceiving so you don't have to throw it as much, so you can live off your fastball a little bit more. Make yourself a better pitcher. How about you actually just perfect your craft instead of just saying that, oh, they made me throw this pitch, so I threw it and you know, it wasn't good. Like, just be better. Make yourself better.
Well,
it's
right. Like, see,
it's when I saw this, I got so mad. I'm mad that I got mad still, you know, I don't know what it is. It's like an X, like you see it and it just like infuriates you immediately. You go from zero.
Well,
you're
scarred. You have some history with Sonny Gray.
Pisses me off, man. I can't handle people that are not effective, that don't do their job, that have a loser mentality.
Sonny Gray has a loser mentality
and blame everybody else. Yeah.
Right. And it's sort of triggered two reactions among Yankees fans that I saw this last week. One of them is that Sonny Gray hasn't learned, same old Sonny Gray, which I think is where you and I fall. And the other one is that Larry Rothschild's a bad coach and needs to go. People were blaming Larry Rothschild for this scenario, which I'm not saying he's totally
Blame. What Sonny Gray wants you to do. So everybody who thinks that is Sonny Gray's little pawn right now.
Like,
so
I think we just have to look at
keep
a situation.
That in mind.
Can't we just look at a situation logically and say Sonny Gray could not handle New York. He could not take accountability for his struggles. He was not willing to put in the work to better himself. But also, Larry Rothschild maybe just isn't the right coach for him. And the Yankees pitching coaches and staff do deserve some blame. I'm not saying they are all to blame, but you can't just say that it's 100% Sonny Gray's fault.
Okay, let me paint a picture for you real quick about this, because I am very much not on board with Larry. When something goes wrong, there's usually multiple people to look at. Okay. But there is one clear person to look at in this situation, because
slicing up the blame pie, he's got like 90% of it.
If you remember the rumors early in the off season, it was Sonny Gray to the Milwaukee Brewers, That was like the big thing, right? Then it became Sonny Gray to the Reds. And then that happened. Why was that happening? Do we all know why that was happening? I know why that was happening, because the pitching coach from Vanderbilt was with the freaking Milwaukee Brewers. Then he went to the Reds, and now that's where Sonny is. Back with his college coach, because his college coach knows how to coddle him, knows how to you know, say the right things to Sonny Gray and support him and be all in his corner and let him do whatever the hell he wants to do, because that's where Sonny Gray feels comfortable. He's got to go in places where he is in a position where he's coddled.
Fine. I don't care. And he's going to be playing in front of 12,000 people on a nightly basis.
But he had to go back to the coach from college. He was going to follow him to Milwaukee. And then he got traded, or he moved over to Cincinnati. Then he's going there. Like, it's a perfect little bow on why he's such a bitch.
Right. That's not a player you want on your team needs to have everything aligned. And
he needs to have one coach. The only guy that can get the best out of Sonny Gray is one dude.
You know, it's kind of, you remember, we talked about it, the appearance on the R2C2 podcast, Sonny.
Yes.
And we were like, wow, like Sabathia is really going out of his way to try and win, to try and get Yankees fans behind him. You know, wasn't that sort of the takeaway from it? That it's like, I'm supporting this guy. Everyone likes me. I'm supporting him. So everyone's going to like him. Like Sabathia was trying to take him under his wing, and Sonny Gray couldn't even be receptive to that.
See, I don't even put it that way. I would say that like Sonny's like, can I be on your show? Can I be on your show?
I don't think Sonny Gray knows what a freaking podcast is.
CeCe, people will like me if I go on your show and we talk and we act like we're friends, and because people love you, so they'll like me. People will like me more if I go on your show.
I don't think
and,
so.
And you
I
probably
think
said
Sabathia
it like that.
Was
like a real whiny voice.
I think Sabathia was trying to be the clubhouse leader that he is.
Yeah. I could see Sabathia being like, "All right, kid, like you can come on the show. I'm gonna try, but you know, be cool." And he just wasn't.
Well, maybe you want to go travel to Cincinnati and see a Reds game, watch Sonny Gray pitch.
Just heckle Sonny Gray from Cincinnati.
Boo the hell out of him. The best way to do that is going to be using SeatGeek. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. You and I both have the app on our phones. We use it frequently. I usually try and grab some last minute Yankee tickets. If you know, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I want to see what the price is for Yankees tickets that night, I might hop on SeatGeek and just grab some tickets last minute.
Yeah, it is designed to make your ticket experience, buying experience, easier than ever by searching multiple ticket sites and grading every single ticket based on value. SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with the confidence knowing that your seat will be there and that it is guaranteed. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything sports, concerts, and comedy. I've used it in the past. I've bought Jets tickets. I've bought Springsteen tickets. I've done Yankees tickets. So SeatGeek is the best way to go and by far the easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets. Best of all, listeners get $10 off their very first SeatGeek purchase. Just go download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Mailbag time. First up is Justin, JTMac21, our old friend Justin checking in. How far can this team go without addressing their starting pitching depth? For a team that should be contending for a title, sitting back and relying on CeCe to hold up, plus not plan for any injuries was risky. Hopefully the kids can step up, but I'd rather attack the quality vets still available. I guess the quality vets he's referring to are Dallas Keuchel and Gio Gonzalez, because they're the only two starting pitchers still on the market that are worth a damn.
Yeah. You know, so this is a question that could go back like 2 years even, because last year when we saw all the injuries happen, you know, a lot of people were looking for the trade to make for Brian Cashman to go out and make a move for a pitcher. They didn't do it, and we saw what happened. The starting rotation was pretty much decimated. There was a lot of issues. We saw a bunch of guys that we didn't want to see pitch for the team. This year is, I think, a little different. I think there was definitely some areas that they addressed. They brought Hat back. They went and made a trade for Paxton. So they absolutely went out and I think made this starting rotation better. The tricky thing is when you start getting into like a sixth or seventh guy, who are you going to bring over that will agree to being that sixth or seventh guy? Like, the decision was Sabathia. So I think that's where, if Justin's trying to improve this, then they wouldn't have brought Sabathia back, and they would have gone out and made a deal for a guy like Keuchel. That would have been really one of the only ways to do it, because when you're talking about depth, like, you can't go out there and just sign a guy for depth because he's got a pitch.
Well, you also, I think Brian Cashman was comfortable with where the five starting pitchers were going into spring training. We know Sabathia is delayed in Severino's injury. Severino's injury was not expected. And I still think he is willing to wait and see how the team shakes out and make a deal at the deadline. I think he's always willing to do that. We're actually going to talk about that in the next mailbag question. But I do think one fair second guess, I don't fall into this camp necessarily, but a fair second guess that I hear from fans is that they were not willing to just spend the money on Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, but the thing is if they went and purchased Patrick Corbin and they spent the money on him, who's to say that the rest of the guys fall into line?
Well, they had already traded for Paxton.
Yeah, but probably so maybe get dealt then.
You're probably right about that.
Yeah, I the decision was Sabathia. Like that's where it is. If you don't bring Sabathia back, then I can understand. Then maybe they still sign Hap, and if they were to sign Corbin, if they were to actually do that. But something's got to give. There's five rotation spots. You can't go out there and get a guy that's worth a damn and say, okay, you're going to be our sixth guy. Like, what do you do with him at that point? So you have to go out there and fill your rotation. And when you're talking about depth, you got to look in the minor leagues. And I think, you know, when you look at what's down there with Herman and Loaiza and you know, Sessa, if you want to include him as well, I think there was a comfort level knowing that those are the guys in reserve. Like, they're pretty good, and I think there's a comfort level.
Find that funny. You use that term for those guys you're talking about. I don't think there's a comfort level. I'm sorry.
Well, for a sixth or seventh guy, the comfort level is objective at that point. It depends on what you're talking about, and it depends on where your comfort level starts for a sixth or seventh guy. I think a lot of teams would love Loizaga, Herman, and Sessa to be their sixth or seventh guy. So, I think it's all relative in how you're looking at it, but you can't go out there and just sign a big name guy to be your sixth or seventh guy. That's not feasible.
That's not feasible, but that's how Yankee fans treat it.
Well, that doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like, you got to go out there and you have to have something in your minor leagues for that point, or you have to be, flexible enough or have the ability to pivot and make a move. And that's what we're talking about. I think if they see that, maybe these guys aren't, we didn't see like Herman or Loizaga take that next step. If they were to be that guy that had to come in for a significant amount of time, then Brian Cashman goes to the trade market.
Yeah, the trade market for Marcus. Barring any more serious injuries, what do you think the Yankees trade deadline will look like? Never too early to speculate. And I say to you, Marcus, it's too early to speculate. It's March 10th, and you're talking about July 31st. The season hasn't even started yet. We don't know who's going to be pitching well, not pitching well, healthy, not healthy, what teams are going to be good, what teams are going to suck in July. So many things will change between now and then. But I read this question for one reason. It's because the Yankees are about $2 million under the next tax penalty. They're over the first tax penalty. They're about $2 million under the next tax penalty. Do you think that will be a hindrance to anything they do in the season?
I think it could absolutely play into it. I mean, when you're looking at the difference between the penalty and you're saying $2 million is the threshold now for us being in that next bracket, now you're looking at $2 million equating to, much more than that. The difference in the tax.
The tax goes from 20% to 32% once you go over that. So they're in the $206 to $226 million range right now. If they go to, right now it's about $224 is their payroll estimated. If they go over $226, it goes up to 32% tax.
That's a significant amount of money when you're talking about $2 million.
It's a couple million bucks.
When you're talking about the $2 million, then you're looking at that player. Now you can associate a cost with that guy. That's way well more than $2 million.
If they could acquire somebody at the trade deadline that will help them and they don't do it because of that tax penalty, I think every Yankees fan has a right to be pissed off.
I don't think that it would prevent them from making a significant move. I do think it will be it will be part of the decision though. And depending on the guy, depending on how long, if it becomes more of an investment and it's not just a 1 year guy, I think it would be easier to swallow. Things like that. Like, I think it will be a situational case. I do think it will go into the decision factor, but I don't think it would be a deal breaker.
Well, like, I could envision a scenario where there is a team that maybe thinks they could be a wild card contender this year that just isn't, and they're out of it come June and July, and they want to offload some of their more expensive players. And if the Yankees could get a starting pitcher for basically just eating money, it's going to cost more than $2 million because an expensive starting pitcher for a half season could cost $8, $9, $10 million. I don't know who this guy is. This is all, hypothetical. That would put him over,
yeah. Assuming no other moves are made and there's no more clearing of any payroll for somehow. I don't think it's going to be a deal breaker, but it's going to go into the equation. You're going to add that money to the $2 million and say, okay, now we're getting this guy. He's putting us over. So now he's not just a $2 million guy, but he's however many millions at this point. And is the value there? Is it worth it? Are we going to have him for more than 1 year? Is he going to be something that, can we find a guy that not only helps us this year so that we have to add to the salary and to the payroll, but he's going to be there for, next year or the year after that, where we can actually sit there and say, okay, there's more of a value add here because we have, more control. I think a lot of these things will go into the decision factor.
Ryan Roerig wants to talk about the Verd battle. Do you guys think the Yankees and Boone have to pick Voit because of how horrible it would be if Bird failed in the regular season again? Imagine Bird winning the spot purely based on slightly better spring training, along with his left-handed bat, and then hits well below 200, which is not only possible, but likely. The risk of using Bird seems so much higher than Voit. The Yankees cannot look at these guys as neutral players who have no history fighting for a spot. It is dishonest. Voit has a small but proven record, and Bird has a history of one sucking and two injuries. The answer seems obvious. And he adds, why is Andrew and the Yankees so blind to it?
Well, you're blind because it's just like, it's hopium. You fell in love early on and you're just doubling down. That's what's happening here.
Listen, there are certain hills that as podcast hosts, you have to die on,
right?
For entertainment factor. You died on the Sonny Gray hill and you've taken.
Oh yeah.
Greg Bird is still alive. He's barely alive. He's like at the bottom of the hill, like crawling over rocks, like maybe just like one.
He's not crawling over rocks. He's hiding behind the rocks.
One finger. You can see one finger wagging. Like he's still slightly alive. So I'm going to die on the Bird hill until Greg Bird is dead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to. That's kind of where you live right now. Mm-hmm. So Ryan is making some very good points here. Like we've seen what Bird is. Everybody understands what he is, or at least we all think we understand what he is. But and that's where this whole thing lives. The whole thing lives in the but. But Andrew Miller. But one of the best swings in the Yankees organization. But.
Left-handed spring training bat. MVPs.
Yeah. So everybody sees the what ifs and they're still like he's been a guy. Like I think that part of the history that Ryan is saying should go against him is also supporting him. The Yankees have spent a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of resources in Greg Bird. They have a lot riding on the fact that he should be the next first baseman for the long term. If you get rid of that, you scratch that, well, then you're throwing all of that away. So I think there's also, there's a proverbial hill that a lot of the Yankees are dying on too with Greg Bird. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think that they still want him to be that guy. And whether it's, you know, a reality and that could still be the case, or they're just like, this is what we said, we're going to see this through. And this is the last chance. I think that's what we're seeing. But, he still has that left-handed bat. He still has a nice swing. I think everybody just wants to see him like 100% healthy and then they'll make the decision.
A couple things.
Whether that comes or not is another story.
So a pet peeve of mine is when people say that Aaron Boone makes roster decisions. He doesn't make roster decisions. Does he have an input? Obviously, he's the manager. But it's not Aaron Boone picking Voit over Bird or vice versa.
Right.
And I don't even think Boone should be the one who is the face of that. I think that's Brian Cashman. Brian Cashman is the general manager and he manages the roster. Aaron Boone manages the lineup and the pitching changes and all the in-game crap in the clubhouse. So that's just a pet peeve of mine I wanted to get out of the way. Second is I don't think the Yankees are blind to it. I do think they're probably going to pick Luke Voit to start the season. I just don't think they're willing to announce who's going to be on the roster when it's still 3 weeks away because so much can happen between now and March 28th.
I agree with that. If we saw one of these guys go down by an injury, it's going to be the other guy who's going to start the season. So why set everybody up for a position saying, well, this is going to be the guy this early. And then all of a sudden, something happens. Now the other guy's there and we're all, glass half empty at that point. So I think you let it play out. You make the decision at, when you have to, and then let the chips fall where they may at that point. And if Bird continues to prove that he's healthy and hit, I actually think that, if we see that and we see that he's, the guy that they think he could be, I do think that they could break camp with Greg Bird, because he fits the team better as far as lineup ability. But
that would piss off
a lot of people. Who, there's no doubt.
It would piss off more people if Bird gets the job versus Voit. Correct.
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point, yes, because I think a lot more people now are on Voit.
What have
Voit
you done? Has come what over have you done with, for me lately?
With zero expectations, we got him for freaking Chasen Shreve. And he is an infectious personality. He's fun to watch. He's a bro. Like, people like him.
Right. As JJ was saying, he looks like a Goomba from the Bronx, and people can get behind that.
Absolutely. And Bird goes and, you know, lives on an island by himself and, you know, with a cat, a hairless cat.
Hard to relate to somebody like that.
Yeah. There's just not much there as far as relatability. So yeah, I think the masses definitely got behind Luke Voit at this point, and he's become a fan favorite.
Yeegs at Yeegs Sports Hub U. Over under 91.5 home runs combined for Stanton and Judge. So I did a little bit of research. Judge's 162 game average is 46 home runs in his short career. Stanton's 162 game average is 43. Add those together, that's 89 home runs. What Zips is projecting them to do is Judge only 35. I think it's a little low, but I think it also factors in injuries. I think that's why. And Stanton 47, which I believe would be his second career high. And that would be a total of 82 home runs. So I'm going to reword this question and say 82.5 home runs over under combined.
I think over 82. That's I'm living over 82.
So you think they're each going to have 40 homer seasons?
Yeah, I think that again. Essentially, you can't predict any injury like that. So if they're I'm looking at two healthy guys playing that year, then yeah, I could see them both hitting over 40 for sure.
Yeah,
I think if Judge is healthy all year, he's going to hit more than 35.
I'm taking under on the 91.5.
I think I'd take under on 91.5. Yes,
that would be a 45. That would be a ridiculous 46 year. Season, 46 home run season out of each of them. Essentially,
I really hope it's over because that would be freaking fun to watch. Because at that point, you're going to have two guys, you know, battling out for a home run title most likely on the same team, a la 1961. So I think that would be a ton of fun to watch, and I really do hope that happens, but it's probably not likely.
Yeah, I think somewhere in that 82 to 88 range is
which still could be two guys battling for a home run title,
which is still a massive amount of home runs out of two spots in your order, especially when you think about some of the other power in that lineup as well.
Yeah, so the Zips projection is definitely factoring in some injury here, so that's interesting when you look at, you know, how that's factoring in for Judge, because he's clearly over a 35. Home run guy. I mean, Didi's a 30 home run guy when he's healthy. So you're looking at Judge at 35. Like, that's definitely putting in some missed games in there.
He had 27 last year, but his pace was over 35.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be fun to watch, man. I think the Yankees are definitely going to break. I think they're going to break that record again. I think we're going to see more home runs.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, and it's just like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care either, but I still think it's going to happen. I don't
think it has any. Great. So Steiner Sports can sell another bat. We had 2019 home run bat, then the 2018 is obsolete at that point.
Pretty much.
Last question from Beckett Yates. How hard would it be for you guys to be Yankees fans if A-Rod became the manager?
Interesting timing with your question, Mr. Yates.
Well, he sent this in before the big engagement announcement last night.
Yeah. How hard would it be to a Yankees fan? It wouldn't be hard for me to be a Yankees fan. I have rooted for guys that I didn't like in the past. I've rooted for teams that had guys on it, I should say, that I didn't like in the past. I've rooted for Yankees teams that had A-Rod in the past. I'm not a big A-Rod guy. Everybody should know that by now. So it wouldn't be very difficult for me. I would probably be highly emotional in that season if he were manager, but it wouldn't make me any less of a Yankees fan.
Wouldn't make me any less of a Yankees fan either, but I would be angry because I think it would mostly be a circus. And that would piss me off because anytime you can like just take away drama from the team I want to win a championship, I think the better. And this would just add so much unnecessary drama.
Yeah, oh, totally. And you know, the timing being, you know, the breaking news last night with A-Rod tweeting out the massive ring.
Someone
that he
tweeted
gave
me
J-Lo.
Home plate size engagement ring, which is not too far off. It looked like costume jewelry. That's how ridiculous the thing is.
Yeah, it's pretty massive. And being a guy who's engaged right now too, it's like you have a direct comparison. Now Leanne's gonna be like, wait a minute,
right?
You see what A-Rod gave J-Lo.
Now we're
not
competing.
Looking good. You should be mad at A-Rod for that. Just,
I wonder
just
when
that
they're
alone.
Getting married. Wonder if it's the same day.
I mean, I think this is the best decision of A-Rod's life. I think he absolutely made the best decision. I understand that J-Lo is going on her fourth marriage right now, but at the same time, I think this is the best.
A-Rod's no spring chicken.
This is the best thing that A-Rod has ever done. I like A-Rod with J-Lo way better than I like A-Rod before J-Lo. So, whatever that means.
Would she be the bench coach?
Fine. Probably. I mean, I think she runs the show, so yeah.
So then the conversation would really be, well, is this A-Rod making the decision or is this J-Lo? There's no more analytics nerds. He fired all the nerds. And now it's just J-Lo and A-Rod running the show.
I wanted, because when you look at the tweet that he sent out, like every, when I read it, I read it with the, with his, you know, with his lisp or like with the shit, the every S. I just want one time for him to tweet. I want him to tweet that out, like the way it's read. The way he says it, I need him to tweet like that. I would be, I would go 180 on A-Rod. If A-Rod started tweeting like he talks, I would go 1,000%. I would go 180 on him. And I would be a big A-Rod fan if he tweeted like he talked. With the way that, you know, the S's sound.
And then like when he's putting out the lineup, it's him reading it. Hicks, Stanton, Sanchez,
Gold Standard.
I can't think of any others. So I want, so
there, Shishi Shabathia.
It's perfect. I want to talk about this quote from Alex Cora, and really just. Because remember we compared Alex Cora to Aaron Boone last year, both first-year managers. Alex Cora clearly got the most out of his team. Boone got a lot out of the Yankees. They won 100 games, but they didn't win. Alex Cora, there was a quote. He was displeased with Eduardo Rodriguez's pitch efficiency, and he said, to the media, he's old enough. He's been in the league a long time. It's time for him to step up. Can you imagine 1,000 years Aaron Boone saying that?
Yeah.
I can't.
I think there's a level of a guy that's not not at a veteran level where, you know, he's got a lot of respect that you don't have nothing to lose. And I feel like he's kind of that guy. I think definitely Cora is definitely more outspoken and says more things. I don't know, but there's also a level that, you know, you don't care as much about a certain guy. Like,
well, certainly he's not going to say that about like Chris Sale, but
He's a shitter get off the pot guy, so he almost has nothing to lose by saying something like that. You know what I mean? That's where
I found it to be, you know, you don't hear managers, especially in today's game. Like, you might have heard that from like a Lou Piniella, right?
Yeah.
A guy who ran the show. But managers today are more about managing egos and making sure the players are coddled and there's nobody upset in the clubhouse. It's the long haul, it's not the sprint, blah, 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 all the cliches. So you don't hear this kind of shit very often. And when I read it, I was like, maybe it's not a big deal. But when I read it, I was like, oh, man, I cannot picture any of the Yankees managers over the last, you know, decade. Torrey, Girardi, or Boone saying that.
When you're looking at a guy like Rodriguez, though, with, you know, the way that they acquired him and all of the hype, you know, around him early on, he's been very good against the Yankees, unfortunately. But when you're looking at the grand scheme in his entire career, he definitely hasn't lived up to what they thought he was going to be. So it's almost a light of fire situation under a guy where you're trying to get, you know, the talent out of him, and that's it. And you either do it or you don't. So I don't think he cares. And at this point, their pitching situation is interesting. I think with that whole team, like the whole bullpen is God knows what they're going to roll out there. You just see what's his face, Steven Wright, get busted for PEDs now too. So like their depth is super shallow. You either get something out of a guy or you don't. And I think that's what Cora just puts it out there. And he obviously knows the guy. So he, you know, he knows the player, and, you know, whether that fires him up or pisses him off, I think he probably has the pulse. I mean, that's one of the things that we definitely agreed on and said that if there's one guy who has a pulse of a team, and we saw it in the freaking playoffs, he made every right move.
Right.
The guy knows the team
pulling
pretty damn well
out of his ass. And I'm not saying that he is, that his way is better than Aaron Boone's way or whatever. It's just a different, I think they have slightly different managing styles. I think that's fair.
I think that's fair too. I agree with that. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. And it worked very well for him last year.
Yeah.
He got the best out of his possible.
But like we have criticized maybe that Boone wasn't hard enough on certain guys. Like, should he have been a little bit more hard on Gary Sanchez? Now, I don't know how he was privately to Gary Sanchez, but at least publicly he was very easy on Gary Sanchez. And Sanchez had the worst year of his life last year.
Yeah. I just don't think a lot of it, what you say in the public, matters as much. I think the behind the scenes
maybe
thing that none of us see.
Maybe it doesn't, but it's
because I don't think these guys care very much.
But
about
it's all
what
we have to go by, right?
It's what we have to go by, yes. But I don't think they. I think you're probably seeing a little bit more of what Cora does behind the scenes out in public. I think he's probably you know, less of a PR guy in that sense, that he'll just be straight with his answers. Whereas if Boone did say that behind the scenes, he wouldn't tell you that he saw that. He said
Cora's in Festivus mindset, always airing his grievances to the public 365 days a year.
Yes, absolutely.
Gotcha. All right, that's going to do it for us. Next episode, we will be recording from spring training. I don't think we 100% know the plan yet, but we will be recording it while we're in Tampa.
Yeah, you'll probably get some more. I mean, we'll probably put out a little bit more content next week, and we get back on Sunday. So who knows about the regular show, but yeah, you'll definitely be hearing from us. There's going to be a big event. Obviously, we're looking forward to what's happening on Saturday. We have about 80 people going to be in the bullpen club at the Yankees game, hanging out with the BP crew. That's going to be a freaking blast. I can't wait for that. Pretty much all you can drink, all you can eat. Launching the BP crew Tampa chapter. I'm pumped. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going down there as far as like the people who write and contribute to the site. It's gonna be five of us in the house. That'll be interesting. So it's going to be,
I was talking about this, with Frank, and the age range of people like in the house, just like Dom. I don't know. I think
Dom, we got Dom who's in college, 23, who's in grad school,
all the way up to you. Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm ancient. I'm 38 today. So,
today?
Yeah, that's no, just like today as the day stands.
Oh, yeah, your June birthday, right?
Yeah. So we got big age group. JJ's a, you know, early to mid 30s guy. You're 30s. I just saw Rich. Happy birthday, Rich, by the way. Turned 30. It's crazy. All the guys that have been with Bronx Pinstripes for a long time, you guys all came on in like early 20s.
2011, right? 2011.
Now everybody's 30 plus.
Wow. I've been, when we launched this podcast in 2015, so that's 4 years ago, I was 26, 27.
Yep.
Lots going on in the last four
years. Lots gone on. But yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. Like I'm really looking forward to this trip. We'll be there Thursday through Sunday.
Yes. We'll be at the Friday game. If you guys are at the Friday game, hit us up on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or wherever. We'll try and meet up, grab a beer. Like you said, we're going to be launching the Tampa chapter. So we're going to be going to a brewery, right? We have that solidified.
Yeah, we're going to be mostly launching. The chapter will be at the event on Saturday. I know a lot of people from Tampa are going to be there. So that, and then on Friday after the game, we're going to be going to the same brewery we went to last year. It's called
Southern Tier Brewery.
Thank you. Southern Brewery. I think it's called, the whole name is Southern Brewing and Winemaking or something like that. But it's close. It's a super close Uber shot from the stadium. So if you are looking for a couple of beers after the game too, definitely meet us up there. We'll hang out there for a while as well. Southern hang out with as many people as possible.
Southern Brewing and Winemaking. The address is 4500 North Nebraska Ave. Just want to make sure everyone knows where we're at. Southern.
Yeah, it's
totally
kind
different.
Of in the middle of, it's kind of like you stumble upon it. But it's a cool little brewery with,
take an Uber there. Don't walk there.
Yeah. They got cornhole in the back and like a bunch of good beers, usually a food truck. So, we went there last year or the year before that. It was a lot of fun.
All right, that's going to do it for us. As Scott said, we'll be doing a bunch of stuff from Tampa, so check that out. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.